Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to call Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Today is Thursday, May 2nd, 2019. Record reflect the time is 3:33 p.m. We have present today Senator Reinbold, Senator Machicki, Senator Kawasaki, Vice Chair Senator Coghill, myself, Chair Schauer. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. The staff assisting us, we've got Carrie up front with Senate Records and Eileen with the LAO behind us. Jake assisting from my office as always. So one item on today's agenda, and that's going to be to get an initial rollout for HB 71, State Personnel Act, Veterans Experience. We're going to go ahead and bring up HB 71, State Personnel Act, Veterans Experience, sponsored by Representative Andy Story. I'm going to go ahead and ask Representative Story and her staff to come to the table and walk us through the bill. When you're ready, go ahead and put yourselves on the record, and you may begin.
Thank you, Representative Andy Story, representing District 34. Thank you, Chair Schauer, and members of the Senate State Affairs Committee. Thank you very much for hearing House Bill 71, a bill that would ensure veterans, former prisoners of war, and members of the National Guard that they can use documented military experience to meet the basic requirements of a state position. Veterans have served our country and should be honored for their service and sacrifice. The transition to civilian life often proves to be difficult. In a 2012 survey, two-thirds of veterans named finding a job as the greatest challenge in transition from military to civilian life. As you know, Alaska has the highest proportion of veterans of any state, so we can expect finding civilian employment to be a major issue for Alaskan veterans. The current state policy is to accept experience gained while serving in the military to be used to meet the requirements for state jobs. House Bill 71 would simply put this current practice into statute, adding a new subsection to the State Personnel Act. The legislation would provide certainty to our veterans, ensuring that their military experience could count regardless of changes in administration or administrators. I know this personally as a 15-year member of the Juneau School Board. We had changes in superintendents and in human resource personnel directors, and while a practice had been in place, it was not in policy. I mean, it was not in our adopted policies, and so oftentimes those practices did not get followed. I always think that when I talked about putting this bill together, that has been the case here too, that we have found that policies have not always been followed. And so this bill, by placing it into the State Personnel Act, should increase compliance. Thank you for hearing the bill, and my staff, Greg Smith, and I are here to answer any questions about it.
Okay, thank you for the introduction. We'll start with Senator Machicki has a question.
Thank you. Thank you for this bill, Representative Story. I support the bill. I have one question, which I thought was strange, that it included the words after veteran, former prisoner of war, which would be a veteran. Seems redundant, yet you could be a prisoner of war and not a veteran. So I worry about that just a bit.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, that is the way it is written in statute right now, and so I'm just following the language in the statute. And please, Greg, feel free to comment. And we have personnel here from the Department of Personnel, if Greg does not know the answer.
Greg Smith, staff to Representative Story, Senator Machicki through the chair. The decision to include the language of veteran, former prisoner of war, a member of the National Guard, does relate back to the statutory reference you see in line 6 of the bill. That decision was made because those three, I guess maybe call them populations, There is already in statute an employment preference for those different groups. And so we decided to kind of follow that. It's also defined in 3925.159. So we decided to follow that for kind of consistency's sake. Your question on whether someone can be a prisoner of war
That wasn't a question.
Oh, pardon me.
You can be a prisoner of war and not be a veteran. That was
a statement.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's a statement.
Right.
Could we invite, I mean, and you can stay there, maybe pull up a third chair, but since we may have a question or two, it sounds like, for administration, if they wouldn't mind coming up and potentially answering, because in addition to his question that he had, I had one question. Do we even have anybody that fits in that category one? And barring something really strange like an influx of refugees that came from a country in Southeast Asia, which or something like that, which is always possible, that were considered in that category, then you could have an influx. So I guess it's possible, although probably very unlikely. But do we have anybody currently that falls into that? And can you add anything to Senator Machicki's question?
Sure. For the record, my name is Kate Sheehan. I'm director of the Division of Personnel and Labor Relations. I don't know if we have any current prisoners of war that have received an employment preference under our policy or current statute. I do know that they are assigned different point values. So if you're a veteran, you get a 5-point preference. If you're a prisoner of war or a disabled veteran, you get a 10-point preference. And with the 10-point preference, you do automatically get an interview if you meet the minimum qualifications. Our practice has been to give every veteran who meets the minimum qualifications an interview. However, the 10-point preference requires that we give an interview. So we do distinguish them somewhat.
It's just perhaps, and I'm not a guy that just looks for a reason to amend a bill, but perhaps it should clarify that it is all a veteran, that a former prisoner of war or a former veteran prisoner of war or something, so it doesn't possibly bring another non-veteran category into consideration. I know you probably haven't run into that, but when you think about the possibility of verbatim interpretation, seems like there's a risk that may exist there. Comment on that?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, I do see your point. As Greg pointed out, it is currently kind of defined that way in statute, and I don't know that it's been interpreted that way, but I do see where you're coming from.
I think the intent would be, and maybe I'm wrong, just to see if I've got his intent correct as well, is that if you had, again, I could envision a scenario where there was a category of folks that came over as, say, refugees. We've had that happen in the past, happened after the Vietnam War. And a whole bunch of people came over. Many of them were classified along like prisoners of war because they actually were. Could that happen? It could. If the intent is to make this strictly for military veterans, perhaps a slight word change so that we defined it would be maybe acceptable, because then we would be clearly talking just about military veterans of our service and not another category that might be created on its own. Does that make sense?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, yes, it does. And we can certainly have Department of Law review it and see that what the interpretation is based on the interpretation of the other statute as well. I don't know the answer to that one.
I haven't thought about that. Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. I'll just read it just because I wanted to get clarification too. Under the State Personnel Act, it describes a prisoner of war means a person who has been a prisoner of war during a declared war or conflict as determined by the Department of Defense under federal regulation. I don't know how tight a thing that is, but it's actually in this statute, or it's in several different parts of the articles of the Personnel Act. I mean, you'd have to unwind it. I think it's been around for a long time. It just hasn't come up before.
I only bring it up because it is an interesting point. I hadn't even thought of that until he said it, but there have been categories of prisoners of war that we've brought in. I agree. I don't foresee it as a major problem, but it would potentially open up another class, potentially. Because I go back in history, I'm pretty sure I'd have to look at the law that there was an entire category of refugees that were designated prisoners of war because they actually were considered that. And it was not an insignificant number of people. So, again, that may not really be germane to this. Probably not going to all come to Alaska and apply for state jobs. But if the intent was to specify specifically military veterans, then you could make a small change to it, I suppose. But go ahead.
Yeah, I'd be satisfied if the Department of Law could let us know that the DOD definition includes U.S. military prisoners of war. I think that'd be fine. If the definition is existing and that's how they see the intent, I would be fine with not clarifying.
Senator Kaka.
Just on that point, I'm okay with the language as it is because they have to translate military work experience training for non-military work experience. So I think that's tight enough for me.
Boy, it's the end of the session, and my brain is being twisted every way coming out of the last 2 hours of HB 49, criminal law, and 87 pages, or whatever the heck we're on right now. That's a really good point. Can we take an at-ease for a moment? I want to discuss this. Harris, we're not on the record. I told you, I'm tired, folks. Goodness gracious, how long is left in the session? Dan, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Did you copy the questions and kind of the little bit of back and forth about what that would mean as far as prisoner of war?
No, I did not. I apologize for that. I called in a few minutes late, and I missed it.
We'll see if you can answer the question briefly. We're trying to, I'll frame it this way. The phrase, former prisoner of war, can potentially, we think, could be applied to somebody that is not in the military service. So the question was, how would that DOD definition be applied? And would you therefore have, for example, as happened after Vietnam, where you had a host of people come over that could have been classified as prisoners of war, all of a sudden show up and you're putting people, which isn't the intent, into the same bracket as military personnel? But then Senator Caldwell pointed out that if you look at the language, it says to substitute military work experience or training. So is that tight enough to go, that's really who we're talking about? So we're trying to get the difference between not including people that isn't our intent, which is really military veterans, U.S. military veterans, versus a different category. Does that make sense?
Well, it does. I think that, through the chair, I think that Senator Coghill made a good point when he pointed out that if the person doesn't have military experience, then their experience isn't going to count, even though their experience of being a prisoner of war was traumatic. It won't count towards their meeting the employment qualifications.
Anybody want to throw a different question at him to clarify?
I have a fellow committee member trying to schedule a meeting for tomorrow, so I can rephrase my question.
Go ahead. He's on the phone. Do it.
So apparently there's a DOD definition in statute that is directed at this former prisoner of war. That's what we'd like to know, if there's any way you can answer that off the cuff, if that requires some sort of military or seconded to military service, so that we don't open it up to non-military prisoners of war, whether they be immigrants or some other classification.
Through the chair, this is Dan Wayne. I assume that question was directed to me.
Correct.
And I'm not sure if you've all already looked at the definition of prisoner of war in 3925159, and which is a person who's been a prisoner of war during a declared war or other conflict, as determined by the Department of Defense under federal regulations. So each specific case regarding each person in each specific instance, the department would determine whether or not they were, a prisoner of war or not. And so it would be on a case-by-case basis.
Go ahead, Sir Kawasaki.
So just to clarify, so I guess what folks are getting at is, if there's a civilian contractor that drives trucks and is a heavy equipment operator and he becomes a prisoner of war but has no military career, they could still be considered a prisoner of war underneath this House bill and the existing statutes under the Personnel Act?
Through the chair, this is Dan Wayne from Ledge Legal. I don't know if the Department of Defense regulations would if under those regulations the Department of Defense would determine that that person was a prisoner of war.
Go ahead. I know we're getting into opinion land, Senator Machicki.
Is there anything in this bill or in the regulations that require that it's a U.S. military veteran or U.S. military prisoner of war under AS 3925-159? That is for Mr. Wayne.
The way 3925, 159, and the bill are both written, it doesn't say that the prisoner of war has to be a member of the military or a former member of the military.
Interesting.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
My question is, does this bill give a work preference to veterans of Uruguay's military, or has it clarified that we're talking about the U.S.? Is that anywhere in the regulations? Because it seems like it should be.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Greg.
Greg Smith, staff to Representative Story. Senator Machicki through the chair, at least in the term of veteran, again, under the statute 159 that we referenced earlier, it does mean a person with 181 days or more active service in the armed forces of the United States who has been honorably discharged after having served during any period, and there's a listing of periods there. A good.
So there's your veteran. That does define U.S. military. The only place it would be different, I think, is former prisoner of war. Not necessarily defined, or could be defined, I should say, as something outside of maybe the intent.
Mr. Chairman, mm-hmm. I'd like to clarify in the record that the intent of this committee, if you all agree, is that this bill is for crediting work experience or training for U.S. veterans or U.S. former prisoners of war and a member of the U.S. National Guard. That it's not extended that way. I think the intent is clear. I don't think we probably have to drag this out. If we had more time this session, I might have amended the bill for including the word and clarifying the former prisoner of war. But I think the intent is important to clarify. So unless there's strong disagreement from the committee, I think that probably serves the purpose of legislative intent.
Is there a word change anybody can find that's very simple? We could do a conceptual amendment and move it something to the effect of, and I'm just throwing it out because we put this out there, but maybe the procedure allowing a former U.S. military applicant who is a veteran or something to that effect, so we're defining that it is a U.S. military veteran. There's a way to do it. We can make this very simple, conceptually amend it and move. Does it? Okay. Oh, boy.
I got a different question.
Senator Kawasaki, go ahead.
Thank you. Just a different question for Kate, maybe. Can you just describe to me how the basic duties and requirements, how the military work experience is compared to the non-military work experience? And it's, I guess, same for the training requirement of the position compared to military training.
Sure. For the record, again, this is Kate Sheehan, through the chair, Senator Kawasaki. What we do is, in your application, you have to list all your prior job experience, and so you would list what the title was, and then there's a large section that you can list your duties, because it's not always clear the military titles versus our state titles, and so we ask you to list your duties and what you did. Same with training, any special trainings, licenses you have, and then if we have questions, we ask you about them, so we try to make the best match to figure out which experience really is in our world, because the world can be different how they define things. So they do have an opportunity to explain it all. And then if we have questions during the interview process, of course, we'll dive deeper into that.
And just a
follow-up?
Just a follow-up. Just how often does this military exclusion or military preference, how often is it used right now?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, it's used very often. So our policy requires an interview for a 10-point veteran, but we do interview all veterans as long as they meet the minimum qualifications. And as I mentioned, if we have questions on whether or not they meet them, we usually err on the side of they meet them or ask for more information before we interview them. But our current practice is to interview all veterans.
And to be clear, I just want to make this show as Representative Story and I discussed this. It is current practice. This is really about codifying it into law so that we make sure it's not something that somebody that, you know, pick a thing, an anti-military person gets into the position and all of a sudden decides they're not going to give preference. They can't do that. So we're going to, that's really what this intent was, just to make the practice into law. So there was no option. Senator Reinbold.
Can I have a point of clarification real quick?
Of course.
Okay, so just wanted to make sure that I heard Greg right, that you said in AS 3925159 that a veteran, it had to be in the U.S. military and had to serve greater than 181 days and was honorably discharged. Is that what I heard you say?
Greg Smith, staff rep, sorry, Representative Reinbold through the chair. Yes.
Senator now.
Senator, pardon.
Okay. Anyway, Greg, I know. Okay, so that is correct. Is that right? It's not regulation. It's officially in statute that is right there in front of us. So I'm good.
You all good? I was just sitting there asking Senator Coghill if we said something like, you know, as who is a U.S. military veteran, a former U.S. military prisoner of war, we're getting complicated. And the intent is on the record clearly now that what we mean, if anybody has doubt, is this is for a U.S. military veteran or a prisoner of war or United States, one of the state's National Guard members, not somebody from, I believe the example was Uruguay National Guard, or Venezuela might be a good example today. We don't want to do so. That being said, does anybody have any other questions at this time? Okay. Thank you for appearing for the committee. We're going to go ahead and open up public testimony and see if we have anybody available. Public testimony is now open. Do we have anybody online? We do not. Do we have anybody in the room that would like to testify? Seeing and hearing none, public testimony is closed. As always, if anybody happens to see this online, you get a chance, if you didn't get a chance to put your testimony in, you can send it to us via writing, senate.state.affairs@akleg.gov. We'll upload it into the record. I'm going to go ahead at this point, since we've had our discussion around about a few things. What is the will of the committee? Are there any objections?
Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate State Affairs Committee move House Bill 71, version A.A, with accompanying fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
All right, seeing no objections, since I didn't really finish that, at this point, House Bill 71 is moved from committee. I would remind committee members, please give me a moment to sign the paperwork before you leave. And I want to thank you for introducing a bill, I think, that just helps codify something that's important for our veterans. We had a long discussion about suicide earlier today and trying to get them jobs. This is a big deal, making sure they understand that we're open for business for them. So it concludes. Go ahead, Senator Ramble.
Can I make one really quick
sure.
comment? We just got a bill out of committee that I think you guys may in the end game consider. Senate Bill 11 just passed out, and we put in House Bill 113 into that bill. There's two members here, but anyway, this fits in perfectly with that bill. So just keep that on your radar. Senate Bill 11, which is Senator Kawasaki's bill, and Representative Jackson, it all deals with military licensure and preference for military. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Team Bales, have any further comments before we finish up? So, again, thanks for doing this one. The veteran things, they matter, and heaviest veteran state in the country. Concludes our business for today. Senate State Affairs will be meeting again Tuesday, May 7th, maybe not. I'm sorry. Boy, he's living in the past. I'm going to have to get my staff on that one. We may not meet again, so we're going to be previously heard next week, so I'll just say that for the committee so that you know. No other business before the committee. We're going to go ahead and adjourn, let the record reflect, times 3:57 p.m.